Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Black Brick by Dan Decker. Welcome back to the podcast. We are continuing to read Black Brick. Last week we read, "No more excuses," Beltran said from up front. "Martinez has probably escaped Diagon and the police by now, but I think we found his base of operation." He looked back at the four of us. "We're going in after him. Can we try not to mess this one up?" "Maybe we'd be doing a better job," Cherry snapped, "if you told us what was going on more often." "Are we going to have backup from other agencies?" Tom asked. The other Black Brick teams were out of the city on assignment, which was probably the reason why Dolores had been recruited for field work. I watched Beltran closely for his reaction. He always talked about how he was coordinating our activities with the FBI or local law enforcement, but I'd never seen anything firsthand to indicate such things ever happened. "No," Beltran said. "Martinez is our problem. We'll take care of him ourselves." For a brief second, a look of annoyance had crossed Beltran's face, and I saw him looking from Tom to Cherry to me. I could not tell if he was suspicious that we were asking questions that could blow the lid off a dangerous secret, or if he was just getting tired of us constantly challenging his authority. Whatever it was gone as quick as it came. There were not any other cracks in that cold, hard demeanor of his. And now? 26. Half an hour later, Shannon and I were walking towards a downtown hotel that was next to Martinez's location. We were going to provide backup while Beltran went in after him. Because of the gravity of our mission and the fact that all the other teams were out on assignment, Beltran had recruited several Black Brick analysts to accompany them as well. I wondered if Cherry and Tom were with Beltran or providing backup somewhere else. Beltran had not been clear on what their role was going to be, and I had not thought to ask until it was too late. Beltran seemed to think that having four analysts at his back made up for their collective lack of experience and training. The analysts knew how to work their guns and occasionally went into the field, but they were not ideal companions for a mission like this. If we really did have connections to local police, the FBI, or any other government organizations, wouldn't Beltran have preferred to have their personnel on hand rather than barely trained analysts who might freeze when the gunfire starts? As I thought about the past couple of weeks, other inconsistencies began to jump out at me. Beltran had never been able to get us the police file for Bruce Andrews' murder. Other times, he had no problem getting useful information from the police. Was that just because he had contacts in some precincts but not others? Shannon walked slightly ahead of me, pulling her luggage with one hand. The setting sun cast her face into shadow. Since I was going to quit soon anyway, I decided to take a risk and open up to her. She could be quite level-headed when the occasion called for it, and I needed to bounce some of my questions off somebody else, or I was going to go crazy. Speaking quietly, I floated by her my theory that Martinez's defection had been intentionally planned as part of our final test. "You're an idiot," Shannon said, but I could tell there was something she was not saying. There had been a hesitation on her part as she considered my theory, but whatever it had been, it was gone now, buried behind those blue eyes that I was afraid would haunt me for the rest of my life if I did not get her back. Shannon jabbed at me with her free hand, an effort to cover her own misgivings. "There are too many other questions," I said. My luggage did not have wheels, and I nearly dropped it while dodging her punch. It had not been playful and would have hurt. Shannon grimaced at missing but did not try again. "Both Beltran and Peck refused to provide us with adequate assurance that we're working for the government," I said. "Their callous disregard for civilians is worrisome. Says the man that has killed more than everybody else combined. Be quiet. People might overhear you." Shannon nodded politely at the door attendant a few moments later when we entered the hotel. If we were not working for the government, who did we work for? A competitor of Diagon? Had everything we'd been doing been about business? If that turned out to be true, I would feel like a fool indeed. Even though our missions had usually involved spying on or stealing information from various corporations, I could not be certain that the endgame was entirely about money. There could just as easily be a political side to all of this, but it would require serious research to make any connections because Diagon donated to numerous political candidates on both sides. I walked around the lobby of the hotel and pretended to be interested in the news playing on a television hanging from the wall while I waited for Shannon at the front desk. If I could only get her to engage with me in a discussion about this, perhaps we would be able to figure out what was really going on. Even though this was the first time since she had dumped me, it was not my first experience with her suddenly becoming sullen and withdrawn. I had originally become aware of this habit of hers back when our training had started and we'd been assigned to the same group with about 20 or so other kids. While there, we were tested and given lessons. I nearly tripped. I had not thought about those other kids in a long time. We had been told that the other kids had failed and been sent home. And I had swallowed the lie. The kids had all been like us, orphans. There was not a home for them to go to. How many more of us were there? I'd been staring through Shannon. She looked my way and frowned. "It's over," Shannon said a few minutes later once she had obtained our room key. "If I catch you looking at me like that again..." She left the thought unfinished. "Don't flatter yourself," I said. Shannon headed to the elevator, leaving me to catch up. "Peck talked to me again," she said once the elevator doors had shut and we were alone. "He told me what happened to you as a kid." I almost cried. "No wonder you are messed up." Peck said that something like that could leave a man with hidden weaknesses that raise their ugly head under high stress. I did not know how to respond to that. I considered bringing up my suspicions that Peck may have somehow been tied to the death of my parents, but I stopped myself. I had already proven that she was not ready to question the intentions of Peck or Beltran. The elevator door opened, so I remained quiet while we found our room. "Weaknesses," I asked, once we got to our room a few minutes later. "Like my desire to protect innocent people, or the fact I want more of an explanation about why you're breaking up with me." Shannon opened up her suitcase and began assembling her rifle, a scoped Springfield M1A with an adjustable aftermarket stock. I did the same. "I did care for you," Shannon admitted. "I was not using you." That was more like it. Perhaps she was finally coming around. "What changed?" I asked. "It's hard to say." Shannon snapped her scope into place, and she tightened it down. "So you still care for me?" "No." Her voice betrayed the lie. "I can't be with somebody like you." I wanted to reach for her, but she seemed to anticipate my desires because she picked up her rifle. I turned away and finished assembling mine. When I was done, I set it on the bed and went out to the balcony. Night had set in, but most of the lights were on in the office building across from us. I wondered how Beltran knew that Martinez would be located in this building, let alone on this side of it. There was an obvious answer, but I was not sure if I was ready to believe that yet or not. Shannon came to the balcony and was careful not to touch me as she leaned against the railing. "If I see Payne," she said, "I'm going to kill him." I made a noncommittal sound. "There is such a thing as justice," she said. "Isn't the point of justice to make a public example of the offender so that any tempted to do the same thing will think twice about it? Where is your public example? Who will learn the lesson that you are trying to teach?" "Martinez," Shannon said, "and then I'll kill him too." "I'd rather Martinez walk away than you kill him," I said. "Payne tortured me on his orders," Shannon said. "You would not kill him in my position?" "Only if it were operationally expedient." "But Martinez and Payne are beyond the law. If we don't punish them, who will?" she asked. "He kidnapped Vargo today in front of the whole world," I said. "Do you think they will just forget about that?" Shannon's voice became cold. "Sometimes you make me very angry." We stood in silence, the several inches between us feeling like a canyon. My phone rang. Beltran. I answered. "We're in position," I said. "Excellent," Beltran said. "We're moving in and we'll be on the fifth floor in 10 minutes. Be prepared if Martinez takes the fire escape. Don't fire unless it's absolutely necessary, and you'd better not lay down any killing shots." "Understood," I said. "Make sure to remind Shannon," he said. I grunted and disconnected. "They moving?" Shannon asked. "Yeah, Beltran says no kill shots." I retrieved my M1A, loaded the magazine, and chambered around. I pulled the chair to the balcony and sat. Shannon pulled her chair next to mine, put her rifle on the patio deck, and pulled out a pair of binoculars. I noticed movement through a window on the fifth floor near the spot Beltran had told us earlier to keep an eye on, so I brought my rifle up and looked through the scope. Both people had their backs to me, but one looked like Martinez and the other Vargo. Shifting my scope, I moved my attention to Martinez and waited for him to turn around. Despite my words to Shannon, now that I had Martinez in my scope, I was not sure if I could let him walk away. Below me was the man that had caused Shannon the worst pain of her life and had made her break up with me. When I realized that I was applying pressure to the trigger, I relaxed. If I confirmed it was Martinez, I would make that decision, but not until then. Several minutes went by, and the man I thought was Martinez turned to the side, giving me the view I needed to confirm his identity. I exhaled. It was indeed Martinez. "Give me the gun, Jake," Shannon said. "Why?" I asked, without looking up. "Use your rifle." The crosshairs of my scope were on Martinez's head. I touched the trigger, still undecided, but almost willing my finger to make the decision for me. "I did not want it to be this way," Shannon said, poking something in my side. That caught my attention. I turned. Shannon had been poking me with a gun. Sherry and Tom were behind her, both of whom had their pistols trained on me. "What's this about?" I demanded. "Just following orders," Shannon said. "Look, everybody relax," I said. With my rifle barrel poked through the metal rails of the balcony and my pistols in my pockets, my only option was to try and talk my way out of this. "What's going on?" In answer, Tom whacked me in the head with his pistol and ripped the rifle from my hands. At the same time, a gunshot rang out from above. Shannon glanced towards the direction of the shot, but looked back. The lack of emotion indicated she had been expecting it. The others had reacted in a similar way. They were setting me up. My team and my ex-girlfriend. The window I'd been staring at through my scope a few minutes before was shattered, and I could not tell if it was Vargo or Martinez who had been shot because neither was in view. I lunged for Tom, but Cherry and Shannon were there before I could do any damage, and they restrained me. I suffered another hit to the back of my head, and this time things became a blur. I opened my eyes to the sound of sirens. My head hurt, and when I touched it, my hand came away bloody. Bits of hazy memory came back until I remembered that Tom had hit me. Then, like an avalanche, I remembered everything at once. I sat up too quickly and became dizzy, making me afraid I would black out again. Taking several deep breaths, I looked around and recognized the balcony of the hotel. It couldn't have been more than 10 minutes since I had lost consciousness. My rifle lay beside me, and Shannon and the others were gone. Crawling, I approached the steel bars of the balcony and looked down at the emergency workers on the 5th floor of the office building. Through the window, I could make out a body on a gurney. The face was not visible. But by the suit the corpse was wearing, my guess was that the victim was Vargo. First Bruce Andrews and now Lane Vargo. It wasn't safe to be an executive for Digon Corporation. I picked up my rifle and entered the hotel room, detaching the magazine. I saw that it was still full. I was halfway through breaking down the rifle when I thought to check the serial number. I could not quite say what made me do it, but I chalked it up to healthy paranoia. It had not been removed, as it should have been. I slowly let out my breath. Black Brick's normal procedure was to remove anything that could identify a weapon. Beltran insisted on it. The serial number was always filed off. I was sure it could be traced to an address that would have more incriminating evidence on me. I must have woken up earlier than they planned. Otherwise, I'd have arisen to the police pounding on my hotel room door. I finished stowing the rifle in the suitcase and left the room. Several minutes later, I found the stairs and left the building.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com and you will receive a free ebook. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LC.